You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
We'll talk about that after the break. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Tennessee baseball survived a scare last night. Take it down, Queens. 6-3. For a second, it looked ugly. But they survived. Sam, were you locked in?
Yeah, I was. My buddies and I were grilling some hot dogs on the front porch, hoping to just watch playoff hockey with a big, you know, hoping to get a big win. But we were unfortunately locked into that game for a little bit longer than we anticipated.
Yeah, it was ugly. Bob?
Yeah, I watched some of it. I joined it when it was 2-2. Saw that Marcus Phillips got run early.
Yeah, not a great outing for Marcus Phillips, and it feels like you could go ahead and, I don't want to say completely put to bed any idea that he's going to be an important arm for you out of the bullpen down the stretch, but I don't have any confidence in him, so I can't imagine Vitello will have any in big moments. Now, maybe his hand gets forced, kind of like it did against Kentucky, the final out in game 3, but bad, bad start for him.
Yeah, so I picked it up from there, and it was kind of frustrating to watch, man. It's, you know, thank God for Dylan Dreiling. I mean, dude hit a bomb, but... You were just saying, John, you fished out what Queens College record was?
Well, I was just, yeah, when I was just getting the box score up, it said they were like 12-37. And I didn't realize that last night while watching it. Wasn't really paying attention to the record there. It was one of those, I'll admit, I was just kind of half paying attention to because I kept thinking, like, surely Tennessee's going to win. Surely Tennessee's going to win. They're going to break through. And then finally, you know, you're locked up and there's drama. And then, yeah, you know, Dreiling hits the 3-run bomb to kind of finally put it to bed. And then, you know, we're texting about Kirby getting in. I'm getting some tweets of people like, well, hopefully Kirby read the scouting report. We're about to find out. But then, like, he's like, loads the bases in the ninth, and you're only up 3 with bases loaded, no outs. You're like, oh my God, what's about to happen here? But then, yeah, this morning, I was a little surprised and a little miffed to see they were like 12-37. That would have been an absolute disaster of a loss. I mean, obviously, being Queens College, their RPI is not going to be great, but it was down like in the 240s. It would have been a real killer for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, oh God, we were just saying in the break, how tough, how embarrassing would that be? You'd get named number one in the country, and then you lose a game like that. But it didn't happen, so... What do we think about Dylan Loy long term? We think that they've got odds on him being a starter at some point.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt Dylan Loy can find himself into a starting position. I think he's done pretty well in the time that he's, you know, played in his midweek games and stuff like that. And he's, you know, I think he did a good job yesterday of kind of coming in a high stress situation and, you know, and kind of getting out of some stuff. And, you know, he kind of settled down the ship a little bit, and everyone was, you know, you kind of got dialed in. It felt like he was kind of getting you through some innings, and then you were just waiting for the offense to come up, and you're like, well, we're going to break through here at some point. And then you get to like the 6th inning, and you're like, when are we breaking through? But then, you know, you finally get that from Dylan Dreiling. But yeah, I mean, I think Loy can be a guy that you potentially mold into a starter long term.
When you say that, you mean next year?
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Not down the stretch here.
No. Just thinking for ensuing seasons. I just know there was a lot of hype around him when he came in.
Yeah, I mean, local kid.
Yeah.
A lefty. Those are two boxes I like having checked. It's almost, you know, we had the conversation ongoing with the basketball team, but the baseball team and the baseball rotation, I kind of feel the same way about. Like, I think you're going to bring in at least one starting pitcher probably every cycle. It feels like in the transfer portal, whether it's just a guy that started at a small school that you kind of bring in and you hope that, you know, maybe he can give you 4 or 5 innings out of the bullpen or becomes a starter, you know, I don't know. But like same as with Causey, I mean, that's who, that was his reputation, right? And now he's a quasi-starter for you. I imagine Tennessee will add two or three of those guys pretty much every cycle. So I don't know if the freshman Loy will be able to, you know, just take that spot next year. I don't know if the spots will be available. I don't know. I feel like Vitale has done a really good job of bringing in pitching from the portal, of course, starting with Dahlander.
Agree. I have to say, I don't want to sound like that guy, but it did cross my mind last night as I was watching this game towards the end. It's like, you get to the we keep talking about making sure the Vols get enough RPI love to host a super regional. These are the type of games. It's not going to be a Queens College. It's going to be a better team, but in the regional, you know, I just worry a little bit about what I've seen in the last couple of midweek games, and maybe it's just they're focused on other stuff. It's like I kind of equate it to what we've seen in golf, where, you know, there's the reputation of Brooks Koepka has that some of the tournaments he doesn't show up for. When the majors are there, he shines. But when you get to, like, to a regional round for baseball, and we've seen it happen in years past to teams like Arkansas and others, you can get dismissed pretty quickly by an upstart team.
The hope for me is that the midweek game is just one they are not taking seriously. Like we talked about yesterday, when we asked Kirby the game plan or, you know, the midweek games, it's kind of like, you know, haven't really looked yet at the game plan. Don't really know why we came out flat against Lipscomb, et cetera, et cetera. The hope is a regional, you have the utmost focus and attention to detail and treat it like a weekend SEC series. And that's something, of course, this baseball team has done well this year, winning seven straight series since the Alabama one. But also, like, that's something Vitello's done really well in his career in the regional. Like, I mean, like, it's been a long time since we've lost in a regional.
True.
Yeah, you had a couple scares, sure. Like, Georgia Tech gave you a bit of a scare. Campbell was tough. Wright State, sure. But, like, you were locked in. You ended up winning those games. So, like, I don't worry about the letdown regional game. But I worry about a couple things. Like, the lineup did not carry over the sixth inning against Florida? It did not carry out over that momentum.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you'd come out, you'd score. Like, if you'd asked me yesterday what the over-under was that I would kind of set for the run scored by Tennessee, I'd have been like 10.5, 11. You kind of thought you'd get back to the double digits and really just kind of beat this team down. Like, that was the hope. You know, I remember saying that yesterday, that I hope that Tennessee makes a statement, that Tennessee comes out focused to show, like, hey, now's a stretch run. Hey, last week happened because you weren't focused. Let's be ready to go now. Didn't really feel that way when you come out and you get the start, you know, that Phillips gave you, where he walks a couple guys, hits a guy, and next thing you know, you're down 2-0 and chasing from the get-go.
Right.
You didn't have that performance that I hoped for. But it was another one where you had some late game heroics. You scored 4 runs in the 7th to give you the lead. You were able to close the door in the 8th and the 9th with shutdown innings and a save. Survive in advance, kind of the name of the game in these midweek games. Tennessee survived in advance and avoided a disaster, because it would have been pretty embarrassing to get ranked number one then lose to a very awful Queens team. Or a very bad Queens team. Maybe awful is a little extreme, but they seem pretty bad.
I do love seeing Combs come in there with he's got the inked up arms. He's just like, he just feels like he brings fire. We needed it. All of a sudden I looked, I was like, I was kind of like you, John, even in the 9th, I'm kind of half paying attention, you know, looking at my phone, other stuff. And all of a sudden I'm like, geez, the bases are loaded. And Kirby punches a guy out, so that helps. But then, you know, I think Tony had seen enough.
Yeah, and Combs came in and struck out 2 guys on 10 pitches, you know, came in and he had his good stuff. So, like, when you win, you come in and say, okay, nice, Combs was in another pressure situation. That's stuff you can build on. That's evidence that maybe, you know, you could rely on him and have confidence in him in big moments in the postseason. So, like, when you win, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, good for Dryling. He had been – it's been a while since he had a huge clutch hit. Not that he'd been necessarily struggling or choking in the clutch, but it was nice for – you know, they're calling him Mr. Clutch to come in and hit a three, you know, hit his 3-run bomb after they had walked to get to him. Like, that was cool to see. It was cool to see Combs come in and strike out two guys with the bases loaded in a high-pressure situation. When you win and you have that hindsight, you can look and say, hey, this is good. These are tests. These are another close win. You're able to work out of a jam. I will say the big 0 for 5 from Burke kind of continues a troubling trend there a little bit. I know he hit the bomb in the seventh inning against Florida, but I didn't think he had like a great Florida series either. Like once that hit streak kind of got snapped, I feel like he's been regressing to the mean a little bit.
2 for 12 from that top three yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
So really, I mean, if I'm Christian Moore, I'm like, whoa, hold on. I went 2 for 3, buddy. Like, let's just say the 2 and 3 hitter went 0 for 9.
Sure,
let's do that. Like, hey, because my 2 for 12, yeah, I'm doing a lot of heavy lifting there with my 2 for 3. How about we say Burke and Amick struggled, because Christian Moore was still awesome. He was 2 for 3 with 2 walks. Like, he was on base 80% of the time. So, like, I don't think it's fair to lump him in there. I know that that's how you just describe lineups, you know, the 1 through 3, the 6 through 9. I understand what you're doing there, Sam, but I just want to give a shout-out to Simo. Casey's listening.
I didn't send that too in terms of like leaving guys on base.
Yeah, he's stocked up Bob's fridge with Coke products. The least you could do is point out that he got on base 4 times yesterday.
I was kind of excited last night. Every time there's a game, I'm like, what am I going to pick up tomorrow? But didn't happen.
So yeah, Burke and Amick struggled. I thought Tears was good. I thought Dreiling was good. So like, maybe you take that trade off because those guys haven't necessarily been on fire themselves, especially Tears, I feel like, has been struggling a little bit. It's nice to see him start hitting again. Then, of course, we talked about the Dreiling home run. That was his only hit, but it was a big one, of course. Bargo getting some run at catcher. That was a little surprising.
Yeah. Especially, I think, just for the situation. I don't think him playing catcher is really surprising, but definitely.
Yeah, I guess late in the game.
Bases loaded pretty much, yeah. It was, I guess it shows how much, you know, Vitello trusts him, though, behind the dish, though, too.
Sam, what's your take on, because I see Antigua came in, looks like to play defense at the end. I mean, is this a situation where he started the season hurt, Curley came out hot and just hasn't relinquished the job?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I think it's just kind of, you know, yeah, he got behind the eight ball with that injury at the start of the year and hasn't really found a slot kind of back into that lineup. You know, I think kind of the only spot that's open for him right now would be that DH spot, and he's just not as talented of a hitter as other guys that you kind of have there, I think. So it does kind of seem like you're waiting for next year to throw him at shortstop. I do think Dean Curley probably transitions to third, or Antigua maybe plays like second or something like that. But I think Antigua's probably his best fit as a shortstop because he's a hell of a glove, but I don't think there's exactly like a huge spot for him to slot into the lineup right now.
Jace, do you have any thoughts on the baseball game? Top of the morning to you, by the way. Do you sing in the
top
car?
Top of the morning. It depends. I sing on the way from here, but to here it depends. I'll either go from either like a podcast or music. It depends, really, top of the mood. But on the game last night, I thought it was. I don't really know how much like to think of how much they take the midweek game serious. Like going off of the Lipscomb game last week, you would think that they would have more motivation to go into a midweek game, but. I mean, but then you go and look at it in a weekend series and they come out and they hang like 16 runs on Florida or just take care of business against a much better team. But then it just seems like that they're just sleepwalking their way through these midweek games.
The good news is there's only one more.
Exactly.
The good news is there's only one more. You survived. You didn't tank anything. You didn't lose.
An ugly win is better than a pretty loss. There's always that.
There is always that. And you are right about that, Jace. And now you just get to focus on Vanderbilt, and hopefully let's extend that win streak to 10. Be really nice to go to Nashville and come back with a sweep.
So back to your singing. So you sing when you leave? So maybe that sounds like I've escaped. I've been sprung.
It's not
like a celebration.
It's around 10 o'clock in the morning on your way to get brunch or anything like that. It's just good, positive vibe, late morning.
There you go. Yeah.
Who are you singing?
It depends. It'll be like Morgan Wallen, Riley Green, or it could even go to like older, like 2010s, 2000s music. It could be like anything like that.
That hurts. That hurts. I listen to the oldies, you know, that...
I'm only 20. I'm only 20. That's my childhood.
Yeah. No, I understand. I understand how math works. I understand how the time is linear. I understand all that, Jace. You'll have to rub it in. Yeah, that's my childhood. I get it. I understand. Sam's talking about singing the damn Go-Go's or whoever the hell it was, the B-52s or dropping a bomb on me. Something from the 60s and 70s. Like, Sam is the same age as you, but he makes me feel not that old. Because he listens to old stuff. I like those throwbacks. Mm-hmm. The 2010s. Oh, God. I can only imagine how that makes you feel, Bob.
Oh, I just don't listen. I act like it didn't happen.
I got no other baseball thoughts. We'll do a Vandy preview in the coming days. We'll be locked in on that series. That's a big one, of course. That's what's going to tell the tale of the week. And if you hold on to that number one ranking and, you know, you look at the baseball RPI, Vandy still going to carry some weight there, especially on a road win. Like, I do think Tennessee obviously needs to perform well at Vandy for multiple reasons, but I do think they need to add a couple more road wins just to that resume. It does seem a little light there, but Vandy's a top 25 team. I think they're number 22 right now in RPI, one spot ahead of Florida, so it'd be a similar type of series there. Two out of three is a win. I'd love a sweep.
On that note, last night as I was flipping around on the TV, so Vandy and Louisville was on for their midweek game. I don't know. It was on like ESPN2. They had Carl Ravitch calling that game.
Really?
Which I'm like, I don't get it.
I guess Carl's on salary. It's like, hey, you're not busy. Go do it.
This is just weird.
It must have been one of those like remote calls, I guess.
Oh, good point. Might have been a Remy deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People were upset.
They do those sometimes.
People were upset at Tennessee's remote call. They're talking about how the play-by-play guy for us just thought every ball was a home run.
He was very excited.
He was excited.
You know, a little Chip Carey going in with the old Braves announcer who just would call every fly ball a home run. Used to drive me crazy.
I did notice that last night. Like, there, I'd be kind of like looking down, and they'd be like, oh, and a deep drive. And
he got all of that one. And he like, to the warning track.
Wouldn't even get to the warning track sometimes. Would be like, dang, man, like, you get me excited for no reason.
I guess if you're not there, it's tough, but like, maybe you just have to know, make a mental note, like, hey, I need to be a little bit more reserved on my home run calls.
Yeah. He did go crazy, at least, for the Dylan Dreiling call.
Oh, my
so
God.
He was consistent.
You can't pitch to Dylan.
To Dalton Connect. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
You called him Dalton, I think.
Oh,
did
no.
He really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. The poor guy.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Now, Jace, you have experience with some of that, right? Or no?
Yeah, I've done broadcasting. Like, so I got a...
But like on like on ESPN Plus, right?
Yeah, I've done like baseball broadcasting for ESPN Plus.
What did you do for them there?
So it's just like you make notes prior to being on air, then you just...
Now, were you on air, or were you just... Oh, really?
Yeah,
so
yeah, like
what game did you do?
So, I've done, like, different games, like, for MTSU, but it's been, like... They've done, like, Lipscomb and Austin Peay and different, like, series games. Like,
okay, so then you're there doing that?
Yeah.
I'd imagine those you were live at the actual venue, though.
Yeah, you're actually there and in the box.
Okay. All right. And you're a sophomore?
I'm going to be a junior.
Going to be a junior?
Yeah.
Seems kind of wild that they would just throw you in the booth there to do play-by-play. Like, I don't mean any disrespect by that if it comes across that way. It's just
different sports. They pay different people to do it, but then, like, some other sports that are, like baseball, like, non-revenue or, like, soccer, then they just have, like, students come and do it because that's, like...
For hours?
Well, it's not, like, for hours because they don't pay you to do it, but it's, like, at MTSU... Because they have a big push for journalism and stuff like that, so they just...
Yeah, I guess I've been by hours, just like things you needed to graduate and class hours, technically, and stuff like that.
More,
but just basically
it's more
resume
so
stuff.
It's more so an experience thing than an hours thing.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm over baseball talk, Sam. You can send us a break now.
I think we're good.
The segment's brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, veneers, implants, they can do it all at Knoxville Smiles. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff take pride in helping you make the best decision about your dental health. They can do that for you, too. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. It was John L. Smith, and that's the guy I was thinking of at Arkansas, and strangely enough, he was the one that went viral for telling people in the press conference, you gotta smile! Life's not so bad, smile! And then people kind of made him the Joker, because, you know, of course, the Joker's always like, let's put a smile on that face of yours. Knoxville Smiles, John L. Smith, smile! Which we're wrong. Looking through this Arkansas football page, Bob, you kind of realize how many crummy coaches there have been and how they just kind of get lost in the shuffle, because like you, I would have bet just on snap reaction that Chad Morris came before Brett Bielema. That was not the case. Brett Bielema had his whole run at Arkansas, got fired in 2017. Then Chad Morris got his 2 years. So his 2 years led into Sam Pittman, which I actually would have thought about that and realized that if we, you know, had actually thought about it, because you don't go from Brett Bielema to Sam Pittman. You don't go from one big old hog that coaches offensive yeah. line and run game to another big old hog that coaches offensive run game. Like, you got to sprinkle in the little skinny offensive whiz guy that's going to go 2-10, and then you return to tradition. If we'd actually thought about that, there's always the overcorrection after you fire a coach. You want somebody the opposite of what you just hired. Hey, big dumbass Jeremy Pruitt, defensive guy. Fire him. Well, what are you going to do? Yeah, you're going to bring in the hotshot offensive guy
right.
in Josh Heupel. And if Josh Heupel fails, guess what we'll do? We'll probably go with, like, hey, we need to slow down this offense thing. Let's get somebody that can coach defense. You don't go from Brett Bielema to Sam Pittman. We should have thought better on that one.
No, it's true. Man, it also underscores how much of an abject failure Morris was. Because I remember that now, you know, and it's like, yeah, it seems good. He has SMU humming offensively. It's just what they need, and they were a disaster under him.
Did you take Sam Pittman as an O-line coach for Tennessee?
Sure.
When he gets fired?
Sure. Would I take him as a head coach? No. Would I take him as an OC? No. Income coach offensive line? Although, you know,
he can recruit the hell out of some offensive linemen.
He can, but, you know, I feel like we're coming off of a good cycle for Ellerby. You know, he got Zaylen's hurt. He's done okay, and – you know, you got – is it Campbell? Is it John Campbell? Not John Campbell. Who's the
– you're naming off all transfers.
Yeah, I don't mean the transfer. I know John Campbell's transfer. I'm thinking of the – who's the five-star right now in North Carolina? Not Campbell. But he's between us and Clemson and Ohio State.
Oh, like a kid who's
– yeah, the five-star. Yeah, he's boys with McIntyre. It's not Campbell.
I don't remember his name, to be honest with you.
Jace, you're a recruiting guy by chance? I need a recruiting guy here. I can't keep up with everything here.
I can try to pull it up real quick for you.
Well, no, I was really wanting you just to stall while I kind of scrolled and figured it out myself. Sanders. Is it David Sanders?
Yes, David Sanders. Yes, David Sanders.
That's who I was thinking of. Yeah. See, I wanted you to stall as I found it. Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, David Sanders, if Ellerby can land him, then I think Ellerby's kind of cooking with grease. He's not Sam Pittman, of course, but, like, I think Ellerby's done an okay job here, or a pretty good job here. Now, if you take Zaylen's Hurd out of the mix and we don't have Big Lance here, maybe I have a different opinion. If we're like, hey, we're in another year of not having a left tackle, we're trying to piece it together. But I feel pretty good about our five-star stud sophomore left tackle right now.
No, I do too. But I think the development side is more what I'm talking about. Like, it feels like we haven't developed an offensive lineman that we've had here since Heupel's been here. It's just been either guys that are like rollovers from Pruitt's staff or like some just transfers kind of that you've gotten in, which is recruiting, but like not development.
Have we had long enough to do that though? And what I mean by that is like we haven't really had the throwaway year where you're just like, hey, we're going to work on developing guys and like, hey, we might take a step back and we might suck. I feel like in the transfer portal, you don't really do that anymore. You kind of bring in the transfers to play over those guys, and maybe your depth develops and eventually breaks through, or maybe they don't. But I would say, like, the fact that they have Dane Davis at least playing somewhat acceptable offensive line in the SEC. And I know it's not great, but like him and like Ollie Lane play at least somewhat acceptable offensive line in the SEC. I think both of those are kind of accomplishments for the staff.
Playing advocate.
Not to the devil.
No.
Just arguing.
I would argue that the fact that you have to play Dane Davis and Ollie Lane shows that you can't develop the guys.
Oh, no. I don't disagree with that. That's a red flag. That's bad. I'm just saying, like, I feel like it's hard to develop depth in the transfer portal these days. But, no, there's a long list of guys that haven't developed. That's completely fair.
I guess my point is, like, in the, you know, the 3 years that you've had it, like, I've seen position groups develop that aren't the offensive line, you know, like,
okay.
And I think that have taken bigger steps. I think that group needs to take a big step this year and including next year, like when you've just got a group of a lot of new guys.
And it does play, I don't want to say chicken and the egg, but just go with me. It does play into itself where you're like, hey, the offensive line, I feel like is kind of overachieved, but we think that because the offensive line, we don't have a lot of confidence in it. And like the guys aren't proven commodities. But I feel like in 2022, the offensive line was pretty damn good. And I know you're talking about Darnell Wright being a Pruitt leftover guy. You're not giving him credit, you know, LRB credit for that. I won't argue either way because he was a five-star lineman. I do think he finally reached his potential and became a top 10 pick. Was that development or was that just better coaching and scheme? Or was it just him becoming the player he should have anyways? I don't know. But I feel like as long as Cooper Mays wasn't out, because that's what everyone points to in the Florida game for being so bad, like I feel like the offensive line's been at least serviceable, solid. And I think this year it should be good. But I would probably feel differently if Big Lance Hurd hadn't transferred here. Yes, sir.
I still wonder, without excuse me, with Arkansas, I still recall it being Sam Pittman was who they had to settle on. I think they were trying to hunt for much bigger game as far as a coach, and they ended up settling with Sam. And if you recall, he got off to a kind of a good start, and I remember some of the Tennessee fans were, maybe even me, were like, man, we should have given him a shot. But things have worked out.
9-4 in 2021, and then, yeah, 7-6, and then 4-8. Arkansas was right there neck and neck with you as Tennessee fans. They were neck and neck when it came to the SEC program that had the most to offer across the board in sports in 2021. You know, your football programs were in similar places. You could even say Arkansas was a little ahead of you in 2021. Your basketball programs were competition. Your baseball programs were competition. Right. Does seem like Tennessee's kind of left Arkansas in the dust a little bit. Now, maybe we'll see if Calipari can get them back, but the football program, obviously, in shambles.
Yeah.
Arkansas, Jerry Jones, Dallas, Cowboys, no, Dallas, Mavericks, Luka. Nice. Did not look good last night. Luka looks, I don't know if he's doing the Joel Embiid, like, hey, I'm going to play up, I'm hurt a little bit more whenever I'm missing shots, but he looked slow. He looked like the knee was bothering him. He couldn't make a jump shot. And Oklahoma City looks like they're going to give Dallas hell this series.
Yeah. We rewind the tape from yesterday. I was like, man, I think I like Dallas to make this a series.
I wasn't going to point that out.
Yeah, I will. It was a pretty bad start for the Mavs. And definitely, at least for one game, the stage didn't look too big for Oklahoma City. They look very, very good. And what I'm struck by is they don't have – you look at their roster, we know this, youngest team in the league and all this other stuff. Their most seasoned veteran with playoff experience is Gordon Hayward. He played 7 minutes last night. They don't need him. Not that he's that – you know, he's not better than a lot of these players they've got. But my point is, man, they impressed the hell out of me last night.
If – Minnesota takes care of business against Jokic and the Nuggets, we're going to be pretty much guaranteed either we have Minnesota breaking through, Oklahoma City breaking through, or Luka and Kyrie breaking through to get to the finals. And that seems kind of crazy to me because I do think the Nuggets are done. Yesterday I compared it to the 2000 11 Lakers running up against the Mavericks, and maybe this is just kind of one of those one-off years, and maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the Celtics are the best team and they win the championship, and it doesn't matter who they play in the West. But just getting to the finals, it does look like a 22-year-old Anthony Edwards, a young Thunder team with all these assets that didn't really cash anything in at the trade deadline and didn't really worry about having any backup bigs. Or their big move at the deadline was just buying Gordon Hayward off of like the scrap heap.
Yeah.
And either they're going to get to the finals or this Mavericks team, and Kyrie Irving is going to continue like his resurgence and his renaissance. But last night it looked like Luka didn't have it, and it feels like Luka has to have it if they're going to beat Oklahoma City. Because Oklahoma City is one of those teams with a good home court advantage.
Agreed. SGA, just a sniff from a triple-double. He looked so good. I'm really impressed. You know, the guy that's under the radar, not for basketball fans like us, but Jalen Williams, he's an absolute stud. He might be, you could argue he's as important to that team as Chet Holmgren or SGA.
He's a monster. Not to be confused with Jalen Williams from Arkansas, the flopper.
Yes.
Who's also on that team. They have two Jalen Williams, but no, the wing Jalen Williams is really good. From a personal standpoint, I can't really ever focus on his game because to me, whenever I see Jalen Williams on the court, I just see our former colleague, Chance Collins. To me, he looks just like Chance.
He does.
Every time I see Jalen Williams, all I see is Chance. I've never texted Chance that. I don't know how he would take it. I think he'd laugh about it, but I don't know. He might be like, you think all black people look the same, John? I'd be like, no, Chance. I don't think that. I just think you look like Jalen Williams, but
it's
maybe
a smile.
Maybe Chance is listening on the way to work today, and he hears me say that. But whenever I see Jalen Williams at their ball, and I just see Chance Collins.
I can 100% see that.
But, no, he's a stud. He's a monster, and he was one of those guys that, you know, you find from Santa Clara, and the Thunder was able to kind of take a swing on him and bring him in, and you know, because they weren't dealing with pressure of trying to nail draft picks, so they were just like, hey, we got – a lot of picks. We're rebuilding. Let's just try to find some diamonds in the rough, and I think they found one with Jalen Williams.
He's changed his body a lot in the second season, too. I mean, he looks much more jacked than he did after his rookie year, which I guess you got to do in the NBA. You just got to keep building up so you can endure the season. But he looked like a kid last year, and now he looks more like a grown man, and he plays like one, too. Holmgren doesn't need to bulk up, apparently. He can still play.
Holmgren's really good, man.
Yeah.
The Thunder are really good, and it's kind of scary just because they're all kind of young and under contract, and they do have, like, 20 draft picks they can try to move and get somebody else. But the thing is, I don't know, like, what they really need. Their starting five is really good and makes a lot of sense together. Between SGA and Williams and Lou Dort as the defender and Josh Giddey, maybe that's the weak point. Maybe you try to upgrade there. Like if you're Josh Giddey, A, you got to be really sweating about the whole Drake Kendrick beef. Like, hey, I don't know what side he's on. I know what side people think he's on with the allegations he's dealing with. He's like, hey, actually, I'm a Kendrick fan. I'm on Kendrick's side. I don't like Drake either. But, like, yeah, maybe you could really go all in and try to find you a wing. I don't know who it would be. Maybe you try to get a reunion with Paul George, because Paul George is going to be that guy that everyone looks at this offseason like, hey, he fits perfectly at all these places because he's a athletic wing that can shoot and can handle the ball and can play enough defense. Like, to me, Paul George is going to be highly sought after between the Clippers wanting to overpay him to keep him, the Magic bringing him in as kind of the number one / number two option with Paolo, the Sixers, he makes a lot of sense there, although I don't know if he wants to move all the way back to the East Coast. He has times with, you know, the Thunder that seemed to have gone well. Maybe it goes back to Oklahoma City. But the Josh Giddey spot, if they could upgrade that, then they could be a, you know, a real mainstay for years to come. Because if they don't win a championship, Josh Giddey is going to be the reason why.
Speaking of the Magic, have you seen mention of Klay Thompson?
Klay Thompson's another one of those guys that, like, you know, would even make sense in Oklahoma City. He's, you know, would make sense in Cleveland because of Max Strus' experiment. He's not giving them enough. Like, I don't know if Klay can still be that guy, but he's going to be – any team that needs size and shooting at number two at the two spot, which everyone kind of always does needs size and shooting. Klay Thompson might get a bag from someone, and I don't know if the Warriors will be willing to match that and give it to him, so he's going to have a tough decision there.
Right.
Dallas looked like they missed Maxi Kleba last night. You know, I thought Gafford had good numbers, but I just didn't feel like he was actually impacting the game winning-wise, and Chet was pretty much, you know, doing the same thing to him on the other end. But once, like, Gafford was off the court, Lively looked overmatched. The bench in general looked overmatched. I thought Dallas looked a man short last night. I don't know if they have anything for the Thunder. A Thunder-Timberwolves Western Conference Finals is going to be great basketball. But, like, I don't know if the rest of America is going to care.
It's true.
But SGA and Anthony Edwards are two of, you know, the burgeoning, bludgeoning, blossoming superstars. Blossoming sounds good. Blossoming superstars. Young, ready to take that next leap and be the faces of the league, and both in small markets. Maybe a little Team USA-Canada rivalry leading into the Olympics. Who knows? But that series would be really good, but I can't imagine the TV people would be doing backflips over that. But real hoopers would. Real hoopers and real hoop fans would be excited for that. Sam, did you pay attention at all to the Thunder?
Thunder
Mavericks?
I watched hockey last night instead of these games. Yeah.
So you're a hockey fan, not just Preds.
Yeah. Well, I like the playoffs. Like, I'm not going to just watch a random regular season game, I think. But
sure,
like,
but you're actually watching, what, Rangers? Were you watching Rangers?
Rangers-Canes.
Hurricanes?
Yeah, double overtime, great game.
Yeah,
and then,
that was a good one.
And then Stars and Avs was great, too. The Stars went up 3-0 in the first period, and Avs came back and won that in overtime. So.
Oh, wow. So the Stars blew a 3-0 lead at home?
Yeah.
In one period?
Yeah. That's just the Avs, though, man. Their offense is lethal. I've got a buddy who's an Avs fan, and he was like, everyone was chirping him when they were down 3-0. He was like, just wait.
Which one is more heartbreaking? Let's talk a little hockey, but really just from a fan psyche standpoint, because I don't really know the rules and, like, I understand icing and offsides and stuff, but, like, yeah. I don't know the intricacies of hockey. No one wants to hear me talk about this. But what is the more heartbreaking loss? To be up 3-0 in the third period at home and lose in overtime, or to be in the Hurricanes position where it looks like you're going to steal game two and you just keep giving up late goals and tying goals and they beat you in double overtime?
It's probably the Canes, I think. It felt like the Canes were in control of that game for, like, at least two of the periods. And
yeah, I mean, they were up 2-1 after the first period.
Yeah.
The Rangers come out and tie it, but then, right before the end of the second period, the Canes took a lead. And then, again, the Rangers came and they scored, what, was it the 15-minute mark? Or how long was gone? I guess it was kind of early in the third period when the Rangers tied it,
yeah. It was pretty early.
Okay, so it wasn't like you got down to the final minutes and thought you were going to win, but
– yeah. No, but I definitely think that, and, you know, I mean, they had, like, 50-plus shots on goal. The Rangers goalie was just standing on his head. He had, like, 55 saves or something like that. So I think just psychologically, when you get that many chances to kind of put them away, tie something up 1-1, steal one on the road, and then you go into double overtime, and that's just kind of a killer. I think that one hurts.
You haven't lost at home yet, but hockey, the home ice doesn't really translate like it does in other sports in the playoffs. So, like, having to win four of your next five games against the number one seed is going to be tough, at least if you're the Stars, I guess.
Stars are nasty. That's going to be a
You're still the one
series.
Seed, yeah. You
That's
think you can overcome that?
Yeah.
Blowing a 3-0 lead in the third period, though. Like, if I'm the goalie, or if I'm a fan.
First period. No, they were up 3-0 in the first. And then,
oh, I thought they gave it up in the third. Okay.
No.
Never mind.
They scored two in the second period, and then it was kind of just back and forth.
Okay.
The rest of
that. I thought you said they were up 3-0 in the third period. No, okay. That I thought they just had a complete collapse. Okay, that's a little bit different then.
Yeah.
Never mind. I was talking hockey. Let's move on. I don't have it in me. Bobby, got any hockey talk?
No, other than I am intrigued by that Rangers series. Sounds like it's off to a great start.
The Garden's just electric right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rangers haven't lost so far this year in the playoffs, and then, you know, you've got the Knicks. It's just like New York sports fans are just over the moon right now.
Yeah.
Do you think karma is back on the side of James Dolan after he released his song with JD and the Straight Shots? I think it was called I Should Have Known, a about his friend Harvey Weinstein. Do you think that was him getting karma on his side?
Maybe.
Because he talks about Harvey Weinstein and what he was doing to all those women. And he's like, I should have known.
When did this come out? I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, you know, the accusations, you know, have only been like 5 years old, I guess, yeah. Right? With Weinstein. So, I mean, I guess sometime in the last 5 years, but okay. I don't know when the actual release date was. But I'm just asking, you know, because karma seems to be on the Knicks' side. And that's the only thing I can think of because James Dolan's been such a bad owner for so long.
Yeah. I feel he can never generate good karma. I just don't think he's capable.
I really just wanted to reference the song I Should Have Known about his friend Harvey Weinstein, which is a pretty funny song to actually record. And if I'm him, I'm like, maybe just leave some art on the shelf. Maybe write that as a poem and keep it to yourself, like a therapy thing. Mm-hmm. The Garden is rocking. It would be fun to be a Knicks and Rangers fan right now.
Yeah,
they're insufferable when they're winning.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, as far as the Knicks go, and I know that, you know, you rooting hard against them right now, but I will say at least it does seem like Dolan's really tried to, like, keep the old players there and, like, in the mix. Like, that was something I think he struggled with. He kicked Charles Oakley out of the Garden, you know, a handful of years ago, and that was a big controversy. But, like, seeing Carmelo there and seeing John Starks has been there the entire time.
Stephon Marbury.
Marbury was there acting a fool this last game.
Did he? I don't even recall that he played with the Knicks for a
while. Yeah, no, he was with the Knicks for a good bit. I don't know how many years, but I would say at least 3 or 4 years.
Because I know he was with the Nets, too.
The whole Starbury era was kind of when he was with the Knicks.
Yeah, he is acting a fool, though. It's like, take it easy, man.
So I will. That fires me up. I like when former players, and, like, you know, the Titans, they'll bring back former players. And I like it when guys seem invested in the actual culture and franchise. So that's been cool to me with the Knicks, despite their fans kind of being annoying.
Don't get me wrong. If they win the series against the Pacers, I'd be rooting for them against the Celtics for sure.
Well, last little bit here on the playoffs is good news for you, as the Knicks were already kind of only playing 6 or 7 guys, and they just lost another one. Mitchell Robinson going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a hurt ankle, or hurt foot. And that seems like good news for the Pacers. Pacers should win this series.
It's just one less body. I mean, I think Precious Achiuwa has played better than Mitchell Robinson in the last couple of months. But you're right. It's one less body, and they don't have many to begin with. So I'll take it. I will take it.
Only one game tonight. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, at the end of the show. But
yeah,
good talk. Sam, break now, please. Now. Hour number 3 kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Let's talk some NFL. Let's talk some Tennessee Titans. Easton Freeze, friend of the morning show, covering the Titans. Broadway Sports. Easton, top of the morning to you.
Fellas, how's it going?
Going well. Hope you're well. The Titans made it official yesterday, or at least according to reports, bringing in Tyler Boyd, 1 year, $4.5 million to add to the Titans receiving core. Another veteran on this in this core. What were your thoughts on the signing?
Yeah, strong signing, one that we saw coming. Not shocking, right, that Brian Callahan had some interest in a player he's really familiar with, a veteran who, as he's been talking about for the past month or so, you know, he really has wanted a player on this roster to emerge as their reliable slot option. And I think the way that he plans on running this offense is reliant upon them having that kind of guy. If you looked at their depth chart before going and signing Boyd, it was DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley, and then like 740 receivers. And that telegraphs to us, like, hey, this team wants somebody to emerge, and they have no idea who it's going to be. They're just going to try to figure it out. And I think they decided, we're not going to do that, actually. We're going to go and get our guy. And he is on the back end of his career. He has shown consistent decline in the past 5 or 6 years, but he's still a high volume player, the kind of guy that is going to be exactly where the quarterback wants him to be, a QB's best friend kind of guy. And in the last 5 years, even though his production has gone down each year, he's still demanded at least 80 targets and played at least 15 games every single season. So that's the kind of guy they want in the fold, and I think it's going to lend itself to not just Will Levis's development and you know, having a strong receiving core top to bottom, but it's going to lend itself to Brian Callahan's offense working the way that he wants it to.
You put out a good graphic yesterday on X, kind of, you know, outlining just how old or experienced this wide receiving core is, depending on which side you want to be on. It's either old or it's experienced. Which side of the coin are you on? Is it a positive approach or a negative approach at what the Titans have done in the receiving room?
I refuse to accept your binary. It is both. They are old and experienced. But, man, they are old. I mean, I jokingly referred to this group last week when it looked like Boyd was going to be a Titan as the nursing home wide receiver room of the NFL, and some very sensitive people took issue with that. I'm sorry, it is, and you shouldn't be upset when people call this group old, because they are. They're the only wide receiver group, starting three receivers in the league, whose average age is north of 30. The next closest is Miami. Their average age is 29, and that only happened 10 seconds ago when they signed OBJ, who's almost 32 years old. So they're the only team in the league whose average age is over 30. They're also the only team in the league without a starting wide receiver who is at least one starting wide receiver who is at least 25 years or younger. Their youngest guy is Calvin Ridley, and he's going to be 30 this year. So they're old, but that does not necessarily mean they're bad. Old does not mean bad. And if you're a Titans fan and people are going to get, because listen, the haters are going to say you're old, and the haters are right. But you can tell the haters, listen, all these old men put up 2,700 yards last year in arguably worse situations, right? Because DeAndre Hopkins was playing on a team where he was the only target, and every defense they played knew the ball was coming his way. That's not going to be the case this year. Last year, Calvin Ridley was playing on a team where he was the clear one, but his supporting cast, the guys around him, were not quite as good. And there were some serious questions about the way that they utilized him, his route tree, and some analytics-based arguments we won't get into today. But I think he's going to be utilized in a stronger, a way that lends itself more to his skill set. And then Tyler Boyd last year was catching passes from not Joe Burrow. I'm blanking on the guy's name. That's how bad he is. The guy that was playing.
Jake Browning.
Jake Browning. Thank you. Jake Browning was throwing a lot of his passes last year. So whatever you think of Will Levis, that's going to be an upgrade. So all of these old guys last year put up nearly 3,000 yards combined. And they were in arguably worse situations. So are they old? Yes. Are they experienced? Yeah, man, they are. And that's going to lend itself to Will Levis. You know, like, he's got to feel, I imagine it's kind of strange, right? When you're, you know, the young guy in the room by like half a decade, and you're throwing all these receivers and you're trying to be the leader, and yet they're all these seasoned veterans. It might be a little bit strange, but it's going to help him, I think.
Yeah, I thought last year Hopkins did a good job of really wrapping his arms around Levis and trying to gas him up and trying to kind of help him lead and, you know, fall in line with him. And, of course, Hopkins has the respect of veterans all across the league for how good of a career he's had. So I think that helps with Levis. But I have noticed, and I do see your chart and talking to you, it does seem like you are 100% riding Boyd in and Penn as the third starter. So you've given up completely on Treylon Burks.
I think he stinks. I've given up completely. No, I've not given up completely. And this, you know,
because the numbers look different if Burks is starting. You know, like then you do have someone under the age of 25. Then the average age does go down, and maybe this chart looks a little different if it's Burks instead of Boyd.
Totally the case, and they'd still be on the high end, but they would not be leading the pack like that. You're right. But, you know, it's less of me giving up on Burks and more me being able to recognize where they are on Burks. A lot of people were questioning with this move, what does it mean for Treylon Burks? What does this mean about their opinion of him? And there were quite a few people saying, well, I don't think it means anything, right? Because Tyler Boyd is a slot-only player. Treylon Burks has, so far in his career in the NFL, played primarily on the outside. Even though some folks want to see him move to slot more often, myself included, you know, that's not been his track record in the league so far. So it doesn't mean anything. That's not true, right? So does the addition of Tyler Boyd mean more for guys like Kyle Phillips, who I think you could argue might be done as a Titan after this signing because, you know, he is a small slot-only player who does not have special teams upside, and Tyler Boyd is that exact same thing but better. So like that, you know, that's going to be a hard sell to have him on the roster as well, but that's a different story. With Treylon Burks, while he is not a slot only player. What Tyler Boyd comes in and does, Tyler Boyd playing 800 snaps last year, and we know from what they've told us and from looking at the track record with Brian Callahan's offenses, he moves his players around. So the outside guy is going to be playing in the slot a decent amount. We saw DeAndre Hopkins play in the slot a decent amount last year anyways. So he'll be doing that again this year. And then Calvin Ridley has inside-outside versatility. Traylon Burks has inside-outside versatility. They're all going to be moving around. And it's not going to be just purely lined up as X if you're Traylon Burks. You're going to be moving around to all these different positions. With Boyd in the fold, that's taking snaps away. That's taking targets away. So that's eating into your share of the Titans' offense. And it does pretty clearly say something about the way that they view him, that Titans brass. I think the case with Traylon Burks is the same it's been since the end of the season. And we talked on my show, the Hot Read Podcast, at the end of the year in January about how next year Traylon Burks has got to be the gravy guy for this team. He has to be the guy that you are no more relying upon Traylon Burks to break out or stay on the field for the entire season in order for your offense to succeed, in order for you to have a dangerous passing game. That's not going to be the case this year with this group, and they've done a good job of enabling themselves to say, hey, if Traylon Burks breaks out and as the fourth guy, he finally puts it together, the light comes on, and he avoids injuries and has some injury luck regression turn his way, that's great. That's awesome. It's a bonus. That's gravy. That's icing on top of the cake. But if he doesn't, and it's a lot of the same, and he's just not it, fine. It's cool. It's not going to impact really anything beyond the depth of our team. And so he will be the four. There's a chance he's on the trading block at this point. I thought that before the Boyd signing. I think that suspicion only grows with this signing. I wouldn't do it if I was them. I would not accept a day three pick for Traylon Burks. And that's all you're going to get for him. No one's going to. I will be floored if somebody sends you a second or third round pick. I don't think the trade off there of the opportunity cost, losing a former first round pick who is very talented, is very big, is very strong, is very fast, and has a lot of potential as your fourth guy, which is a really nice place to be. I don't think that trade off for a fourth or fifth round pick really tracks for me. So I say just let him be the fourth. Let him be the guy that learns from these veterans, and the expectations are significantly lower for him than they have been at any point in his career, and just see what happens.
Him stinking makes the A.J. Brown trade hurt so much worse.
You don't say.
Can you talk a little bit, coming off of the wide receivers, where do you feel like this team goes next? Obviously, they've still got some cap space there, and they're still kind of towards the top of the league in that. Do you feel like it's safety coming next, or do you feel like it's an edge guy? It seems like a lot of the fan base is kind of the pounding the table for Justin Simmons there to try to fill in that slot at safety. Where do you feel like this team goes next after filing that next wide receiver three?
Yeah, it's got to be safety, right? And that's kind of what they've telegraphed to us. After the draft, their immediate post-draft press conference, Rand Carthon and some of the staff were talking about how they are going to be in the veteran safety market. And so a Justin Simmons type guy is going to come in eventually. It's more a matter of when than if. They've also, through national guys, talked about, there have been reports. I think it was Jeremy Fowler. That might be mistaken. But there was a national report earlier this week about how the Titans aren't necessarily interested in the edge market. Like they don't see that as a huge need for them, I guess, and or they don't see the edge market as something worth investing in. And so I think it's going to be a safety. You certainly could argue they need help at the edge position, whether it's they think they have better players than we do or they don't think that there are good players worth pursuing. Regardless, I'm not super confident in their edge group heading into the season. They draft a late round flyer on Jalen Harrell to come in and potentially be an edge rotation guy out of Michigan. I think he will be a rotation guy, but your top line starters, you really only got one guy that you rely upon to be your every down, three down, marquee, hold down that side of the line, edge player. You're really scared. Your starters are really scarier on the interior than the outside. That you can live like that, but you'd prefer to have some more juice outside. So that might be, Rome was not built in the day, and this roster needed a lot of work in the offseason. So there's a strong chance that, you know, there is a position or two that they just are playing at with the deficit this season, and Edge might be that.
Touching on the draft there a little bit, can you talk about the selection of T'Vondre Sweat in the second round? And, you know, that one was a bit of a controversial pick, it felt like, amongst the fans. Some people are really big on it, and you know, I think it'll be a guy that can make that combo with him and Simmons absolutely lethal. And on the other hand, you have some people that are kind of worried about the off-the-field issues that arise right before the draft. And, you know, you see some reports after where it's scouts talking about how Sweat is not going to fall out of the second round, and that was a guy that a lot of teams are high on. Can you kind of talk about the impact that you think he has on that D-line, being able to kind of team up now with Simmons there on the inside?
Yeah, I really liked Sweat pre-draft, and I was fond of the pick. You're right that it was super polarizing, and it was an overdraft based on consensus boards. But there's a lot of reasons to like him, and I think he's going to be a very good player. I can't speak to what he's going to be off the field, right? All I know is what they've told us, that they have really done their homework. They met with him. They were the first team to meet with him after his DWI, three weeks before the draft. They clearly got an answer that they were comfortable with. And right after that official 30-visit meeting, they went down to his hometown, met with his family, met with him, learned what, you know, his life is like, what his situation is like, and then laid out some very clear, very firm guidelines, boundaries, guardrails, saying, hey, here's what we're going to expect from you, and here's what's going to happen if you don't live up to your end of the bargain should we draft you. It's going to cost you dearly. And so I think all of that is very clearly defined for him. Whether or not, you know, they're right to take a gamble on the person, whether or not he is going to pan out off the field, like, I can't say that. But assuming they are correct in their evaluation of that and their risk assessment is fair, he's a really good player, man. And people talk about how it's a crazy reach on the consensus boards. Well, when you look at, like, take Dave Brugler at the Athletic, for example, one of the guys that people turn to as a North Star with the draft, he had Sweat as his 33rd player before the DWI, then dropped him down into the 90s or the 100s, wherever he had him, after the DWI. So unless some tape suddenly came to light in mid-April, that's a character drop. That's not a talent drop. The talent is all there. And so I kind of hated that. It was a lot like the Tyjae Spears pick to me, honestly, on draft night, where it's a second or third round pick where people are looking at everything about the guy besides what he does on the field. With Tyjae, it was, look, the Titans drafted a running back with an ACL. With T'Vondre, it's, look, the Titans way overdrafted an interior defensive lineman who can't rush the passer, can't play three downs, is overweight, and has character issues. We're ignoring the fact that all those things are cute and fine on paper. Go watch the guy play football. The guy's a dog. He's a really good player. He won the Outland Trophy last year, which is a very prestigious award given to the top interior offensive lineman in the NFL, and in college ranks, rather. And so I don't see this argument that he can't play three downs, that his snap count is an issue. You can't say those things. First of all, the snap count thing is silly because amongst most of the defensive tackles that went in his area, in his range in the draft, he actually led them in snap count. Snap counts in college teams tend to rotate defensive tackles like hockey lines. That's not really a great reflection of how capable they are of staying on the field. The weight thing, you know, it's the weight thing. It's like the off-field situation. He's going to have to keep it down. I can't tell you whether he will or not, but if he does, he's got pass rush ability. He's got a nasty first step. His hand usage is fantastic. He's a really powerful player. He's going to be an awesome complement to Jeffrey Simmons, and it's going to create a math problem for teams because you can't double-team both of them, and you really would like to. Somebody's going to get a one-on-one matchup, and it's going to go poorly for them.
Easton Freeze covers the Titans, Broadway Sports Media, host of the Hot Read podcast. Last question on the way out. We were talking about it earlier. You know, I think the Titans have done a good job of adding some talent to this offseason. But still, the gambling lines, when you look at the division odds, not reflecting the Titans being much of a threat at all. 10-1, kind of where it's kind of settled at. I saw as high as 13-1. Do you find that to be too high, too low, just right? How do you feel about those odds?
It's too low. And then, you know, the national media, the Vegas, they're going to be low on the Titans. And I talked about this on our show yesterday, but a lot of people appalled by, you know, post-draft, way too early 2025 mocks that have the Titans drafting a quarterback number one overall or number three overall. Post-draft power rankings that have the Titans 30th in the NFL. How dare you, the Titans have had the best offseason. How can you think that? But here's the bottom line, right? When it comes to our perception generally of football teams, unless you are dialed in, a fan of that team, or in the media market for that team and really know what's going on, our perception boils down to who's the coach and who's the quarterback. And with the Titans, you've got two guys that have a lot of promise, but they're both unproven, no matter what you think of them. Brian Callahan, a coordinator who last year was not even calling the plays for the team he was on, is now going to be a coach for the first time. We don't know what his offense looks like. We think we do, but we don't know because we've not seen it. And then Will Levis, we saw less than 10 games from last year, a lot of good, a lot of bad. And you can't say for sure what he's going to be yet. So as long as those two guys are unproven, you can have the best roster in the league around them. And in a small market like Tennessee, people aren't really going to care. Once those guys start to prove themselves, it could be Halloween, it could be Thanksgiving. Things could turn on really quickly. They could turn around, and the perception of this team could change in a heartbeat. But until then, that's the way it's going to be. And I think that the Titans fans, if you're a betting man, this, you know, is a time for value if you're wanting to place some season-long bets on the Titans.
Easton, appreciate the time, brother. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Great stuff. Give him a follow. Easton Freeze on X, the Hot Read podcast. Go subscribe, Hot Read Pod on Twitter. And the Broadway Sports Media team does a good job there covering all things Nashville and Tennessee. A little 10-1 here on the odds. I just feel like it's too high.
I agree.
I was going to say, after hearing all that, do you feel better or worse?
I feel better. And I don't know if I agree. You know, I think he does a better job of covering the team, obviously, and a little bit more in line with the Titans right now. But I don't know if I necessarily agree that I'm penciling in Boyd ahead of Burks yet, though, in terms of the starting three. I think that's going to be a competition in the fall. Agree or disagree with that, Sam? When I say fall, of course, August, training camp, all that. Like, do you look at Tyler Boyd as a locked-in third starter there?
At the start of the season, I do. But I think, if you see kind of Traylon stay healthy and, you know, him rotating in there at that like three or four spot at the wide receiver, I do kind of think you see Traylon probably take that over. But I think at the start, I think they'll probably go with Boyd, a guy that has familiarity with the system and stuff like that.
Well, I want you to go ahead and write that down.
Okay.
Jot that down, because I'll say Traylon.
Okay.
Unless he gets traded. Do I get to say unless he's traded?
Mm.
Because, I think if he's on the team, he's going to be starting ahead of him. I wouldn't be surprised if they did try to trade him for a fifth or sixth round pick. So I don't want to take the loss if that's the case, because I'm not saying he's locked in as a third starter. But I think if he's on the team and both of them are healthy, if they're both healthy, because, I mean, both could get hurt. But, like, if they're both healthy, I think Burke gets the nod. Okay. Or Burke's, yeah. That's how bad he's been. I mean, Clint Trill and Burks sometimes.
Well, that's my question. Agree or disagree that in camp, if Burks is not traded, he's playing for his life, basically, or his job.
I'd be shocked in camp if they cut him.
Yeah,
I'd be shocked at that. Like, I don't think that. Yeah. I don't think he's playing for his job and his life. But like, I think he's gonna have. Like, he definitely is at the very least on the chopping block when it comes to starting, and like in the long term plans. Like, I mean, he could easily get phased out. But no, I'd be absolutely shocked if he just got straight up released.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that either. I'm just thinking, if at that point it's like point of no return, if he can't crack the lineup.
You're saying, like, if he doesn't show any production this year, he's got no chance of starting next year either.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
I'd be really disappointed if he didn't, like, rise to the occasion. Like, this should be an insurance policy for the receiving corps in general, you know, having some extra guys, some veterans, like we talked about, a liaison from the coach to that. But, like, for Traylon Burks personally, it should be a slap in the face. It should be like a, hey, we're questioning you as a player, we're questioning you as a man. Like, I'm spitting in your face professionally to bring this guy in. That's how I hope Traylon Burks takes it.
And he's going to be going up against every team's worst corner.
Well, yeah.
Like,
maybe even some linebackers and safeties in the slot. Like,
yeah.
If you can't make it work now, like, I don't think your time in the NFL is long.
What happened to the guy that was hunting hogs with his hands before the draft. Fraud.
That was so stupid. I never will forgive
you. I fell for that.
I never
so
will
hard.
Forgive your friend Charlie for banging the drum about how good Burks was going to be.
I was banging the drum pretty hard.
Too. Well, I don't want to be mad at you, Sam, so I'm just going to be mad at big dumb Charlie, and I'll never forgive him for what he did. A couple things, but yeah, he's going to be the best player in the draft, John. He's better than A.J. Brown's going to be. He's better. He hunts catfish and hogs. Well, does he catch footballs? Can he run routes? Whatever the first story was, this guy actually has asthma, so being in Nashville is going to be tough. I should have known what was happening at that point. Oh, God.
He got picked ahead of a favorite receiver of mine from Purdue, David Bell, who ended up going to the Browns, and I was like, because Bell's a dog. He's starting to get a little more run in Cleveland, too. You guys would have done better with him.
I've done better with anybody, Bob. Yeah. I've done better with anybody. Should have just kept A.J. Brown. That was coping at its highest whenever I was like, it'll be fine. A.J., that was a terrible decision. Although I will maintain, I don't think A.J. Brown would have changed the future of the state of the Titans over the last 2 years. I don't think they win more games significantly with him. They were so rotten elsewhere. I don't think paying a wide receiver $25 million a year would have been a good move for a team that had no offensive line and no talent elsewhere. Is he a lot better than Treylon Burks? Yes, of course. But would he have made the Titans win playoff games or win the division? No, I don't think so. It's kind of how I felt, at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2 years ago when Robert Woods was running around as your first guy. Maybe.
What a transformation we've had as wide receivers, our wide receiver core.
They're old, they're experienced. Whether or not they can stay healthy and make it through the year, that's yet to be seen, but they do have some talent.
At least it's not Treylon Burks, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, and Kyle Phillips as your starting three.
That's true.
That's as bad as it gets.
We have had a little bit of a glow up. Good job by you, Bob, during the interview, by the way. Way to bring it.
I listened and got some notes for you guys. You guys did a good job.
We can review it either during the break or at the beginning of next segment. Stay with us. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. The Fan Run merch shop officially live. Got some gear up in the store. Go to fanrunradio.com/shop. fanrunradio.com/shop. Got some options up there. Got some hats, some t-shirts. You can rep a Morning Show shirt. How about that? You've always wanted to rep a Morning Show shirt, right, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, now you can, buddy. Now you can. And, to kick this off, we're offering 15% off for the listeners. Just put in the promo code FANRUN, the number 4, the win. Fan Run for the win for 15% off. Free shipping if you buy two things, a.k.a. over $50. Fan Run for the win. FanRunRadio.com/shop. Buy you a Morning Show shirt. Support us. Make us feel good. Go check it out. Bob, you checked out the gear yet?
Just some of the things I looked at with you yesterday. Haven't seen the site now that's gone live. But, yeah, there's some good stuff, definitely. I like the variations on the Fan Run logo. It ties into UT Sports. Like it. Looks good.
We'll be updating that, throughout the years and kind of have that running now and try to do a good, fluid job with that and keep it updated. But, yeah, fanrunradio.com/shop. If you are interested in checking out some of the merch, get a shirt up for the drive as well. If you want to rep the drive, I prefer you buy a shirt for the Morning Show, but I won't be mad if you buy one for the drive. But again, Fan Run, the number 4, the win, all one word, if you can get 15% off. Just a flash sale on that, by the way. It's only going to be good for a week. So use that code. All right, you said you had notes for us from the interview. Anything in particular stand out?
No, I actually enjoyed the interview. I laid back just because I sound like, my voice is struggling, obviously. So I just listened as a listener, and it was good because you guys are fans for the Titans, but you also know your ball, and you hit Easton with some good questions. I thought it was good. Easton knows his stuff too, man. We're going to be talking with Easton a lot during NFL season. So it's good to just kind of bring him in from time to time. I think he brings it.
As a Colts fan, did you get scared?
No.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Fair enough. Jace, you got an NFL team? You care about the NFL?
I mean, I care about the NFL. I don't have a team, but if I probably were to, like, lean towards the Titans because they're in Tennessee. But, like, I've mostly keep up with the NFL to keep up with
my fantasy team. I love fantasy.
No, well, part of that. But also, like, players from Tennessee that are in the NFL. That's mostly what I
keep
up. So, like, I was a big Peyton Manning fan for most of my time. So now I just keep up with the other Tennessee players.
What do you mean you're a big Peyton Manning fan for most of your life? How long was Peyton in the NFL for you being alive? Like, when you're, like, from the age of, like, 10 to 15?
He was still in the Colts when I was watching them. So, from the Colts, okay. From, like, not, like, after they won the Super Bowl, but then, like, so that's it from, like, 08 or 09 until when he finished out with Denver. So
okay.
That's about.
Okay.
But I would say, like, I would lean towards the Titans because they're the in-state team, but.
Do you root for the Saints now for Kamara? Like, I mean, who in the
end? I pull for Kamara. I don't pull for the Saints.
Okay. Well, I said no. I mean, you said you rooted for Peyton, so, I mean, I imagine. I didn't know if other people were jumping on, like, the Saints or who else in the NFL. I guess Dobbs. I mean, you got different jerseys every week, it feels like. Yeah. Chiefs. You should be – your lane should be like, hey, I just love Trey Smith. I've been rooting for the Chiefs. That's what your lane should be.
I was a big Eric Berry guy, too. So, they're, like, I would remember
– There you go. Eric Berry, Trey Smith. The Chiefs have been good to Vols.
Chiefs die hard.
Yeah, I love the Chiefs.
Kamal Haddon.
Yeah, Kamal Haddon. There you go.
Now, I got to say, Jace is young, but he's wearing a vintage Devil Rays T-shirt. That's like – back in the expansion years.
I remember that logo. That was a good logo. Mm-hmm.
Did you see their new
I am a Chiefs and 49ers fan.
Yeah.
That's a good bet.
Love Juwan Jennings. Love Josh Dobbs. Love Trey Smith. So my two teams are the Chiefs and 49ers from here on out.
John, do Tennessee fans that followed the Colts because of Peyton Manning, like, did that piss you off
so
as
mad.
A Titans fan?
Oh, come on.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
It made me so mad. Yeah. And not to name any names, but people like Houston Kress then tried to come back to the fan base after Peyton retired. Because it kind of perfectly coincided with, like, the Titans becoming good. I know there's, like, a little bit of a – like, they did a whole thing. And Houston especially. Houston used to make me so mad. I could say that because we're friends and coworkers. But, like, Peyton retires. Then he does this whole, I'm an NFL free agent thing. And he's, like, doing recruiting visits. And, oh, I might be the Raiders. Oh, I might do this. Then, like, 2 years later is when the Titans became good. Then they tried to become Titans fans. Oh, Derrick Henry. I always liked him at Alabama. Oh, I love the hometown team. I want my friends to be happy. No, you made your bed, now lie it. Now, I can't really make that threat anymore because the Titans stink again. But for those 3 years where we were really good, it did make me mad. Because there's a lot of people like that. And quite frankly, no disrespect if he's listening. I would still like to have a drink with you and maybe eat some Papa John's. But I always hated kind of Peyton Manning in the NFL. I was a Titans fan. I appreciate what he did with the Vols. Now I was like 6-7 when he did it with the Vols. But, like, it didn't carry over for me in the NFL. I'd already kind of entrenched. Steve McNair is my quarterback. I've said that many times. Steve McNair is my guy. So I always rooted hard against Peyton. When he was with the Broncos, I wanted him to win with the Broncos because the Titans sucked and, like, sure. They weren't a rival. But, no, I hated him with the Colts. Okay. Hated him. So the people, like, that try to jump ship. Now, I do have some friends in my life that were Colts fans. Colts that stay with the Colts fans.
That's fine.
And I respect them more than the people who tried to leave. I still hate them because they're Colts fans. No offense to you, Bob, because you're from Indiana. I give you more of a pass. I respect you as a Colts fan. My Tennessee friends, though, like the Colts, I still hate them. Just less than the people that abandoned the Colts.
It's pretty fair rationale there. I can buy that.
I think so. It's really a respect thing. I mean, you hate your division rival. And the Colts, of course, ran the division for a long time. And, you know, I remember beating Peyton in the biggest game the Titans and Colts ever played, which was the playoff game. So we always have that over him. Like, the Titans did beat the Colts in the one time we played in the playoffs in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that was painful.
Yeah, so, like, we do have that trump card, at least.
I've been seeing this graphic that's getting floated around about, like, most wins since 2000 on NFL teams. The Titans were, like, eighth in the league.
Well, I mean, they were really good in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then have been really good, you know, from, like, 19 to 22. So, I mean, like.
And you're just always average in between, you know. It was just, like, a guaranteed eight wins kind of.
No, I disagree there. We had some pretty rough years a couple times with Fisher and then, like.
Sure, but, like, I'm saying on, like, average compared to the 24-year-old stretch here.
I know, but I would like to see, because I do feel like if you just took, this has been a lot of Titans talk, but, like, I do feel like if you just took the number of years where a franchise won, like, five games or fewer in the last 24 years, I would think the Titans would be higher on that list than you would think with the eighth most wins, because I do feel like they had some just real stinkers of years. But then, like, in the early 2000s, won 13 games a year, 12 games a year, and kind of balanced that out. But there were some real bleak years, man, where you really lost a lot of the fan base.
That'd be a better graphic.
But now my Chiefs and my 49ers, they got me, because love Trey Smith and Juwan Jennings. Well, people root for Vols that don't win. Like, if Peyton was on a losing franchise, would they have been rooting for him? Now, maybe you could say he wouldn't be on a losing franchise because he's so great. But, you know, not everybody that's great actually wins in the NFL. Sometimes the franchise just can't figure it out. Like, it's happened to Arch Manning. It happened to his pops. Running for his life with the Saints.
Are there any Vols that are prospering in the UFL?
Javonte Payton?
Say, I think Javonte Payton.
is he back in the UFL?
He scored a touchdown.
This week, like this iteration of it?
Two weeks ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
Jared Garantano, if you want to count him.
Adrian Martinez, I count him. He was VFL, as far as I'm concerned.
Quentin Dormady, he was playing this weekend.
He's back in the league after he survived the scandal of being accused of selling his team's playbook and selling out his team.
That's right.
Okay, good to hear. I do find myself watching some Birmingham Baron games. I like watching them play. Big Taco Charlton out there, former Cowboy. They got some talent on that D-line. They just kind of overwhelm all the other teams. They're dominant. They're going to win the championship.
Elite name, Taco Charlton.
I wouldn't want to be named Taco Charlton.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, it'd be tough to be named after a food.
Surely that's not his actual real name, though, right?
No.
So he's made the decision to keep going by Taco, so I think he's okay with it.
It's not like Taco Fall, where that's that guy actually
That was his real name.
Yeah.
Can you guys start calling me Hamburger Reed?
Yeah.
See? It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It'd be cool for a little bit. I don't know how you'd like it all the time, but Hamburger Reed does feel pretty good.
Kielbasa Beard.
The hell's kielbasa? What is that?
Sausage.
Seriously?
Sausage I eat just really basic, just little circles, and maybe throw it on a biscuit from time to time, put a little mustard on it.
It's like when you throw on the grill.
Kielbasa is like smoked sausage.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. See, I don't eat smoked sausage.
You're missing out.
Yeah, you are.
I've made it 32 years. I feel like 34 years now. Jeez, I thought I was 32. Just lost 2 years of my life, Bob. I feel like I've done all right, Jace. I eat pretty good over here. I don't think I'm missing out on too much.
His name's Vidaunte. Vidaunte.
Now keep it taco then.
Yeah. Tae, sorry. But yeah, definitely just taco.
Okay. I got nothing else on food or on Vols in the NFL. Hopefully the Titans bandwagon fills back up. It would be nice, like, if you could just get people on your side and have people in the state. I wish more people in the state cared about the Titans.
Me too.
Like, I would. What would you give the breakdown, Bob? You're a little bit older. Maybe Sam, you'll have an opinion on it. But, like, what do you give the breakdown of why the Titans don't have more of a home base in state? Is it because, of course, they moved here in the mid-90s when some people were entrenched? Is it because people like my friends and Jace were like, hey, actually, we're going to root for Vols. We're going to root for Peyton, because it kind of coincided perfectly. Like, Peyton comes into the NFL right when the Titans were becoming a thing, and people just kind of made their choice. Like, hey, we're going to go with Peyton instead. Is it the terrorist brand of football they've played for many of the years? All of the above, I'm sure, plays parts to some people. But
yeah, I think it could be all of the above. But the other thing I would say is, and I always thought that this would change over time, but I don't think it has. Is like, I mean, Vol football rules the roost, man. That's
what I was going
to
say.
There's just so many people who care about nothing when it comes to football, care about nothing other than the Vols. Now, if the Titans ever went on an elite run and kind of were dominant, I think that might change a little bit. But I think that to me is the big reason. It's just the people, we know it. We know it and we love that. They have their passion about the Vols and they don't have time for the other team.
So you think we're just a college state?
I mean, moving from like growing up in Nashville my whole life and then like coming to Tennessee for college, like I was actually kind of shocked at like how many Knoxville people don't follow the Titans. And I think it's exactly that reason. Like, I just think Tennessee Vols football is such a strong brand and like something that you can latch onto for like year long, that I think some people just, when you're 3 hours away from an NFL team, it's just not like, It just doesn't hit the same kind of.
I definitely know there are some people like that, but I'm more interested in the people that like NFL football, but just like or really or dislike or like hate or don't care about the Titans. Like, I get it if you're like, hey, I just grew up a Cowboys fan my whole life, and I'm 40 years old. I'm not going to change. Like, I get that. But people like our age and younger. Because, I mean, I was like 6, 7 when the Titans went to Memphis. So, like, that's kind of what I grew up with. And anybody younger than me should, you know, be ingrained with them being here.
See, for me, it's kind of like the opposite from Sam. Because I've grown up, I'm from just right outside of Knoxville. I go from Maryville. So then driving 3 hours to MTSU, there's a lot. Because a lot of people are, like, moving to Nashville, so it's becoming, like, more of a pro sports city with the Predators and the Titans. But then there's a lot more – there's still a lot of Tennessee fans out there, but then there's a lot more – sure, Sam can know there's more Alabama and Ole Miss fans like that out there.
Well, those schools are close, too. I mean, Alabama, obviously, plus, the run they had on is close enough, and transplants for sure.
But, yeah, it's definitely becoming more of a pro sports city with all those people moving in from out of state to Nashville. But there's still a lot of Tennessee fans. They just market it more for the Titans and because they want to have, like, a newer generation fan base, I suppose. This would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I know I kind of make fun of all the people that say, like, oh, the Titans should draft a Vol and all that stuff. But, like, I do think there's probably is something to it, to, like, the certain parts of the fan base. Not me, a distinguished NFL fan. Someone who cares about the team, but, like, I do think you'd have had such a residual effect just in the fan base and in the state had they just been smart enough to take Trey Smith. Somebody who was good
that
enough.
So easy.
Yeah, like, you needed him, and obviously he turned into a really good player, but, like, you needed him. But also, like, take a chance on the local kid that
in
people
the sixth
love.
Round.
Yeah, that people love. Like, how do you let that go? Like, how do you let Juwan Jennings go undrafted? Like, when you need receivers, too, and, like, he does fit, like, what Vrabel wants to do in terms of toughness and run blocking and all that stuff. Like, I just feel like maybe just let the tie go to the local kid. Like, I know you can't really bring that up inside the NFL front office because they'll be like, oh, that's stupid. We got to just get the best player and blah, blah, blah. We don't. But, like, you know, I do think it would go somewhere. Like, if Trey Smith was a Titan or Juwan Jennings was a Titan, I do think you would get 5 or 6% of people.
The Trey Smith one is, like, baffling to me.
It was because you desperately needed offensive lineman. Yeah, he was a 5-star that was really star. Good. And you just had to hope, like, hey, the blood clots don't come back. And, like, they haven't. Knock on wood. Like, he survived and thrived. Like, I mean, and he's an all-pro level guard.
And he's not the only player that an NFL team has taken a chance on with, like, health risks in the sixth round, you know?
Not only NFL teams, the Titans drafted a guy with a broken spine in the first round. Yeah. Caleb Farley was walking around with a broken back like it wasn't playing football.
And a torn ACL.
Jeffrey Simmons was coming off of a torn ACL, too. Like, I mean, like, there's been plenty of injury concerns. I get blood clots are a little different if you have to force medical retirement and all that, but, like, they said it was under wraps and under control, and it has been. So that just kind of drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. We'll do some basketball updates, some portal updates as we wrap up the show. Last call on the other side. Stick with us.